Chapter 53 Dull Disciples. Only the devout Marys, and such as lived according to his precepts, understood the concrete character of him who taught by the wayside, in humble homes, to itching ears, and to dull disciples, the words of life. Mary Baker Eddy. 1887. The journal began its fifth year in April of 1887 with a circulation of 10,000. A short item in that issue has more import for serious students today than it had then. Fire, electricity, and delay. We owe our readers some explanation of our magazine's late appearance. A peculiar hindrance arose. This was in the electricity developed in the paper on which this journal is printed. None of the printers had ever known a case of such strong electric attraction. It seriously retarded the work by causing the sheets to adhere tenaciously and annoyingly to each other. A fire in the lower part of the building also threatened disaster. The flames fortunately did not get under much headway before the engines had them under control. The article did not quote the then current edition of Science and Health, which stated, quote, "Electricity is the essence of mortal mind, the counterfeit of the true essence of eternal mind," end quote. Nor did it note that with this issue, the journal was beginning a new department entitled Animal Magnetism. The National Christian Scientists Association was to meet at Tremont Temple in Boston on the 13th of April. Late in March, Mrs. Eddy sent an urgent notice to her students to attend, saying in part, quote, "I have gotten up this NCSA for you and the life of the cause. I have something important to say to you, a message from God," end quote. Janet Coleman, who was teaching a class at the time, had not planned to attend until she received Mrs. Eddy's letter. Her word picture depicts the leader's disappointment. "She gave us a prayer, but we did not seem to have it to carry home with us. And no one else that we knew did either. Our leader had us come to her house, did all that she could to have us wake up and hear. Just before I went back west to my class, I had to go back to get my certificate. So I went to the college to see Mr. Fry about it. I asked Mr. Fry if he thought that Mrs. Eddy would see me. She came into the back parlor and spoke to me. She rebuked us all for not listening to what God had for us, that we were so happy to see each other that we made merry and paid no heed to God's message. She turned from me and went downstairs to her supper. I burst into tears. I felt the rebuke so keenly. I felt she had told the truth. Soon I heard a step, which I knew was hers, and I turned my face so as not to watch her go through the entry. The first thing I knew, her dear arms were around me, and she kissed me and gave me a beautiful American Beauty rose. This rebuke that she gave me went so deep that I never again felt the pleasures of the world the same. The sorrow over my thoughtlessness in not hearing God's message to us did not leave me, and later on I heard a voice say, quote, 'I will bring all things to your remembrance,' end quote. And then this prayer began to unfold, quote, 'O Lord, give me higher, purer, holier desires. O Lord, give me more self-abnegating desires. O Lord, give me a desire for more love. End quote. The students had planned and held a fundraising concert after the meeting, and their social interests had taken precedence. Worldly activities dulled their ears to their leader's spiritual call. They needed rebukes constantly to chasten their affections, but many reacted against God's messenger. Quote, "Thou art my battle axe, saith the Lord," end quote, rather than profiting, as did Janet Coleman. Alternately, praising and rebuking her students, repelling the attacks on every side, Mrs. Eddy was all the while at the helm, steering the bark of Christian Science through the stormy seas and pointing the way her students should take. In a detailed article entitled, quote, "The Educational System of Christian Science Mind Healing," end quote, she had recommended that qualified students establish institutions in good school buildings in the best portions of our cities. By April, 20 academies and institutes from New York to San Francisco were advertising in the columns of the journal. But the leader's outline for individual progress was completely overlooked. The article also stated, "To protect the public, all my worthy students receive certificates of degrees that are renewed annually until they graduate with diplomas. Until the students graduate, they are incapable of teaching more than the first lessons of the science of mind." For more than a year, the four college courses had been advertised every month. The journal advertisement read, "The class in theology completes the collegiate course. This class includes 6 lectures on the scriptures and a summary of the principle and practice of Christian Science. Tuition, $200. Students may graduate who have passed through all the classes at this institution satisfactorily." No student ever graduated from the Massachusetts Metaphysical College. While the leader was eager for their spiritual progress, they were eager to build a church edifice. The journal frequently carried appeals for contributions, and the students had held more than one fundraising festival. Mrs. Eddy had attended their strawberry festival the previous summer, and though their social measures were destined for eventual failure, the words she spoke on that occasion are destined for fulfillment. After due justice had been done to the ices, berries, and cake, Reverend Mary B. G. Eddy made an address from the portico to the effect that someday Christian Science will enable us to enjoy such a treat without raising the fruit, compounding the cake, freezing the cream, or buying the sugar, just as Jesus fed the multitude without procuring the loaves and fishes through the usual channels of natural production and supply. She also narrated some incidents about the unusual and seemingly supernatural, but really natural, growth of apple blossoms in icy winter and of fresh shoots from dry stems in summer, through the power of mind. She argued that if belief produces disease and its removal leaves health to have its perfect work, then false belief may also prevent the perfect fulfillment of spirit in all our material surroundings, flowers and fruit, not excepted. Little note was taken of her words. The students were more often wandering in some byway than following their leader, though there were encouraging exceptions. Hanover P. Smith had written and published a tribute to his teacher entitled, quote, "The Writings and Genius of the Founder of Christian Science," end quote. One voice was raised in her behalf amidst the tumult raised against her. By June, the field showed sufficient advancement to allow Mrs. Eddy to teach her metaphysical obstetrics course for the first time. Hanover was one of the 14 chosen students in that class. The healing was encouraging, and there was a great deal of it in the field. Much was faith healing, and all was attributable to Mrs. Eddy's teachings and writings. But there was some true scientific practice. Each month, the journal carried numerous testimonials. The January journal had related the newspaper account of the introduction of Christian Science to Joseph Mann and his family. Joseph had been accidentally shot in the heart. Three physicians, after examination, had pronounced the wound fatal. They had left the unconscious patient when a visiting Christian Scientist, R. C. Hannon of Boston, entered the scene and healed the young man. The journal adds, Mr. R. C. Hannon was for several years a sufferer from cancer in the stomach, which physicians failed to cure. Mrs. F. J. Stetson healed him in two treatments in Christian Science and gave him a course of instruction and bade him, quote, "Go into the world, preach the gospel, heal the sick," end quote. The healings were carrying Christian Science far and wide, but news of another type was often reported in the journal. That was the harassment of Christian Science practitioners, sometimes by legal action, imprisonment, and fines for spiritual healing. The persecutions were a trial for all scientists. But perhaps the greatest trial for the leader was not the persecution as much as the false claimants who, in the name of Christian Science, were adulterating her teaching. She wrote to Ellen Brown, quote, "There are 20 false lecturers and teachers to one that is true," end quote.